Welcome back, everyone, to episode 25 of Christian History and Ideas. I'm John Coleman, and I am joined and I'm joining Dr. Nirmal Das. How's it going, Dr. Das?
Great, John. It's great to be here.
We have another continuation in our series, which we've lately gotten into. You can review and ought to review for your benefit as soon as anything else, episodes 23 and 24, because this forms the beginning of this discussion, which will take us as long as it needs to or as short as it needs to in numbers of episodes. But we're looking at the state of the observant Christian world. We'll keep our adjectives to ourselves. Thank you very much. I'm the one who needs that counsel the most, so we shall. But you know what I'm talking about, and we've also analyzed a lot of quirks in that community. And we're seeing here, we're going to put things in a historical context, and we'll take it in this episode and the next into how it's applicable to now. And Dr. Das and I are of the mindset, just to sketch things out, that really a new ecclesiology is dawning. And basically everyone is a prisoner of history, either in this observant world of the Reformation, or of, particularly within the Catholic world, of the 19th century. That includes, forgive me, those who are considered on the left or on the right or the liberals or whatever. That includes everybody. And the reality is what is rising up is about to make all of that irrelevant by hook or by crook. So with that, we're going to start with a selection from Holy Scripture here, and that's Luke 18. Chapter 8, verse 8.
The other way, yeah.
Something like that. Okay. Quote, "I tell you, he will see to it that justice is done for them speedily. But when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" Unquote. Tu autem domine miserere nobis. All right, Dr. Das, where should we pick it up? I know we have to really, as we often do and are wise to do, we need to put things in a historical context. So let's lay out those two R's and let's take our time with them.
Two R's. Yes. What we began witnessing, and this is what we've been discussing for the last little while in our shows, is this idea of great changes that took place in history. And very briefly, the two R's are Reformation and Revolution. These two changes, in their own ways, had some very drastic effects on the church. The church then became a reactionary body, and ecclesiology became, in a large extent, a reactionary system. And this system, or this idea of reacting to social cultural changes, marked the church in a way that became both productive and destructive. And this process of change, destruction, and then something else coming out of it is what we're also envisioning in our time, i.e. we're looking at the logical end of the Reformation and the logical end of Revolution. Now, very briefly, what I would like to suggest is that the first part, Reformation, is an attempt to, rightly or wrongly, rectify the church in some way, fix things up. Revolution, on the other hand, is how to completely de-Christianize the world, because Christianity is recognized as a destructive force as opposed to a positive one. So Reformation destroys in a particular way the church, and the Revolution destroys the church in a more dynamic way. In I see this as a de-Christianization process. So in de-Christianization, we have a soft version, which is, we must listen to reason, we must listen to science, and all these terms we hear all the time. They have a long continuity going back to the 18th century. That's the soft version of de-Christianization, where it's rationality and materialism that provides all the answers. So if you want an answer, go there. And faith and church, well, that's on the side on Sundays, or, you know, private life and all that sort of thing. So it doesn't have that kind of capacity, the faith. And to a large extent, of course, the church agreed with it by reacting to this sort of thing. And so that was the force of the Reformation. When revolution comes about, what we have is a more thorough understanding of de-Christianization, i.e., that even the Reformation doesn't go far enough, because what we're really dealing with are sinister forces, you know, and this is the home of the Black Legend and all that sort of thing, you know. So we're dealing with really sinister forces which need serious political action in order to be neutralized. And that serious political action gets expressed later on in this idea of the separation. Notice the term, it's a very violent one if we look at it, the separation of church and state. So on the one hand, you have destruction through ideas or reason. On the other hand, you have destruction through political means, and by all political means. This is, you know, totally changing everything. Practices, beliefs, institutions, all of those things have to be eradicated. And brought to heel in a way in that they serve politics or society or social life rather than faith, the soul, and all those other things that are now simply the realm of the private. So this is the revolution. So when we're looking at then the system of change or this idea of what to do next, where the church is, frustrations and all these sort of things that are affecting us now in the present day. These are all the logical products or the end game of Reformation and Revolution. And because this is the end game of those things, we are now at ground zero in a way from which we must build. So I would suggest that we are really looking at total destruction. What we really have is a remnant of whatever it was that was there. Both these forces have succeeded beyond expectation and wildly, I should say, Reformation and Revolution. And they have, of course, brought in secularization. But now we're into the next step, as you mentioned at the beginning. And that's where we want to pick up. So this was a brief, I guess, a historical context of where we are on, where we are and why we've ended up here.
Yes, absolutely. And as we sketch out in episodes 23 and 24, which form the beginning of this series, what we need to come to grips with here as we're trying to take the pulse of the church is what Dr. Doss has laid out and where we're going with this is not simply a type of boilerplate critique of the Reformation or the modern world or the revolutionary world. We need to to turns in this year of grace 2021 with the fact that we who believe we have it all figured out are just as much creatures of this. And we saw that in a particularly episode 23, where we looked at Vatican I. And we have to continue that that line of thinking, because we have to really appraise how busted we are before we can get to the ultimately, as I see it, actually very positive things that are coming. And towards that end, no baloney year, we must speak of the reality that the Catholic Church is just as sectarian and as divided as the chaotic Protestant world. It strikes me, frankly, that people who are trying to raise their families and are trying to make sense of things, largely in the Catholic world, have entered into a type of Protestant idealism when it comes to the church. That is to say, we believe in an imaginary church in the sense of almost a Platonic ideal church. And we have made, maybe we've had to make, very much the same interpretive decisions that the Protestant reformers have made, where you have this ideal church for them very often in the early centuries before, you know, Constantine or whatnot. And you see the devout making the same thing now. We must confront this is the exact same phenomena which arose out of the 16th century. And then, as we indeed laid out, so that's what I bring new to this conversation, is that point that we have maybe not been so different than Protestants. And maybe there is a certain sympathy we can find with that interpretive model, but we must identify it as being disordered as well. And then the second point, just to reiterate from episodes 23 and 24, a lot of the frustration in the observant Catholic world is the fact that a lot of these things we consider traditional are 20th or 19th century, including this idea of the church being effectively a modern business corporation. And we react to it in the same fashion. And that means we make our own corporations and we speak of other people. Oh, they broke off from our corporation and so forth. You can elaborate, but I think I've sketched out my point. Dr. Das, besides anything else you'd like to bring up, would you address that point, if you agree or disagree, about the idealization that the faithful have maybe had to go in for, given the situation? But how would you react to that?
Sure. Great point, by the way. And behind all of this problem of church in the mind, a church that is imaginary in a way, imaginary in the literal sense, not fake or not a myth, but literal sense, i.e. that which is constructed within your mind. And you have a relationship to that church through your relationship in that construction, which of course is the hallmark of Protestantism or the Reformation. So what happens then once we get into this idea world of the church is that we relegate those parts that are essential to constructing society, constructing everyday life, to other means. And more sadly, and I think this is the real tragedy of both the two R's, Reformation and Revolution, the real tragedy is that the essential question, the essential question of life, of how it is that we live and what we do, becomes available for other answers that are inadequate. So what is that question? Well, what legitimizes society? That question, the church either fails to answer, answers weakly, or goes silent. And this problem of what legitimizes society, or actually I should say the question of what legitimizes society, is something that we're having serious problems answering. And because we cannot answer them, because we are, I guess, inadequately equipped now, given the way our faith has been thoroughly de-Christianized, or destroyed in a way, right. That, by the way, is a myth. Luther never pinned anything on any door, but that's, we can maybe look at the myths of Luther some other time, because he was a great mythologizer of himself. So yes, that painting never happened, but it's a great painting. So this idea then of what legitimizes society is the serious problem. So does society work according to reason and materialism alone, i.e. is it fundamentally secular, or is society fundamentally transcendent, i.e. aligned with, or actually thoroughly aligned or purely aligned with the spiritual life? And that is, I think, the root of the problem here. Yeah, much better painting. that is the root of the problem here, because what we are then confronting is the meaning of what it means to be living within society. Is our daily life going to be governed by politics, by social dynamics, by social forces, or is it going to be governed by the soul, by faith? And we seem not to know how to answer that question. And because we cannot answer that question, we fall into all kinds of confusion. And by the way, this is not simply on a personal level. This is not between you and me and all that sort of thing that we can't answer. Certainly we cannot, but this is also institutional. The Protestants, of course, fell prey to this very early on. They always had a love-hate relationship with any kind of institution, and yet they needed institutions. But also within the Catholic Church, this sort of dynamic is also fundamental to what has happened, in that it too seems unable now to answer the fundamental question of what legitimizes society. There's valiant efforts made by one individual or the other, and they throw out some words on a piece of paper, but they do not translate into action of any kind. I mean, yes, they make for a great letter or a great book or a great article, but they become what a friend of mine calls also idea merchants. They're simply going around selling their ideas in this marketplace of ideas, as we like to say it. So here's my, these are my, merchant. This is my merchandise. This is yours. You choose. Well, this means that we've already answered the question of what legitimizes society. And it ain't the church and it ain't faith. It's not any of that. It is materialism. It is rationality. We agree to it. So this mindset then is the root of the problem. And unfortunately, from a lot of what I read and watch from people who mean well, who want to do the right thing, who are Christians for sure, all of that, but they fall prey to that mentality because they come out of that mentality. And therefore they cannot properly differentiate what they're saying from what they're critiquing. And so they end up reinforcing the critique by simply, trying to oppose it or reacting against it. So all the people reacting, say, to, building back better in the New World Order and all this sort of thing that we hear all the time, are unfortunately, through their reaction, because they haven't understood what legitimizes society, through their actions, through their words, are simply reinforcing everything. Because in the marketplace of ideas, they have very weak ideas. If we're going to be just talking about the marketplace of ideas, well, those ideas don't work. And that is the problem. So we are always materialistic. We're always rational. And therefore, this leaves very little room for the proper role of the church or the church itself, even, roles aside. So this is what I see as the root of the problem here, i.e., we're all using the same language, we all use the same mindset, and yet we're thinking we're doing something different. And I think this is the essential problem. And this is why, in our private conversations, John, I always go back to the Middle Ages, the medieval church, because if we're going to be looking at some kind of historical reference, we must go beyond the 18th century. We cannot have our references from that period, because that's the time of destruction.
I thought the answer to 1984 was 1776.
That's the other R, of course.
Now, we don't want to rush this, and I know, Dr. Das, you had intimated a very appropriate thing at the end of episode 24, which is the nature of the order which is rising, and we must address this out loud, a certain dark or left-hand path of this order. I want to bring up something appropriate to this discussion. Perhaps we can address it in a full-bodied way in the future, but most appropriate. We speak of the medieval age with this symphonia between various aspects of society and this integrity, not in the sense that I don't try to get chiclets out of the machine if I shake it around or I steal pens at the post office, but a real integrity, not in this limited sense of not cussing or whatever, but rather that my thoughts internally manifest in the actions. Many millions of men in the West, for instance, hate their jobs and they still go, right? This is a feature that Kafka spoke about very well, this lack of integrity in modernity. But this big topic, most appropriate to here, even appropriate to a whole treatment, Dr. Das, is this. We confront, when we look at history in a meta sense, the reality that technologically speaking and organizationally speaking, from Adam and Eve and the caveman days and all this, up until about, we'll say 1800, just to give us a goalpost, that technology is more or less stagnant, more or less. Please allow me some elbow room in these large statements. And that since the Enlightenment, that obviously a certain energy has been released. And I'm just speaking natural energy here. A certain way of thinking has produced fantastic, I'm just using that in the sense of unbelievable, I don't say good or bad, a fantastic aspect in terms of sophistication in society. And I don't just mean gizmos and gadgets, of which those were the first drops of what was coming. And that's what still stands out to us the most. I have orchestra, I mean, no man in the world had more music at his fingertips than we do with our little gizmos. There is a way of thinking in apologetics and so forth where people try to lay out modernity and the fruits of modernity and what people perceive as the good things of modernity as being the logical outworking of Christian thinking. So they'll say things like, well, only the West, the Christian West, had an enlightenment, for instance. And they'll say this in a good sort of way, you'll say. As I think about it, I like to bring things that other people aren't bringing up in other shows here. So I hope this is worth the price of admission. Could it be that the church actually did in fact act as a governor on this line of thinking? So for instance, you cannot have modern economics without usury. It's absolutely impossible to imagine. And as long as that remained, which in fits and starts even continued to the 18th century, you had business hampered. Like, you know, a governor, I don't, you have that on the like go-karts, you know, you can only bring the gas pedal down so much. Yeah. And the same with other energies too. The legal system was checked by the church in various ways. And as my mind has developed over the years, addressing this crisis, which we're turning towards and the darkness of it, do you think the church acted as, in fact, a governor on this sort of progress? And that, well, do you? And then how would you respond from there?
great question, by the way. what I would suggest is that the traditional medieval understanding of history was that history unwinds from God. And that is the basic premise from which everything else emerges. So this is the mindset that we have to think about in order to answer this very interesting question you've asked. So that's one of the first things I would like to, you know, mention. Now, what does this then imply? Well, it implies several things. First and foremost, what is the purpose of living? Of life? Is it to acquire as many gadgets as possible? Is it to have all kinds of sex with anything you can imagine? Is it to eat anything you can, you know, eat? Is it to, you know, buy, you know, millions of cars? Is it to have, you know, endless supply of suits and clothing and all of that stuff? Or is the purpose of life something else? Now, if you're a rationalist materialist, you can only talk about those things that are of the flesh, that make the body happy. And if you are not of that inclination, you're going to be thinking about other things. And given given what the church understood itself to be, i.e. that which represents, for lack of a better term, various facets of divinity, of God, in the material world, in this physical world that we live in, because of that, it understood the purpose of life as something else. And of course, this has been misrepresented, sadly, in the Middle Age, for the Middle Ages, as the Middle Ages were a period of superstition, darkness, et cetera, et cetera, horrible, oppression, where the, people were, people cowered under this oppressive power that the church had. The church could burn people at the stake and whip them, to no end, et cetera, et cetera. So the point here is, and I think this is the key here, is that if we allow life to become purely material, then you will have to agree with what's going on. You would say, yes, that's what this is all about. Fine, I'm happy with it. But if you think fundamentally that life is not purely material, that there is other, something other inside me or inside us that requires a different kind of feeding, not simply feeding through physical means, then you're going to be answering that question differently. Historically, up to the 18th century, the church answered that question in a very fundamentally different way than how we understand it. So I think in order to understand technology and the forces that that has released, the various dark forces that we can get into later, perhaps, that this has unleashed, where I believe technology has now become the tool of the devil, for lack of a better term, or it's become satanic, which is, I think, a better way of describing it. So when technology becomes this, or technology assumes these various roles, or we allow it to do so, what we're really doing then is answering that fundamental question of what is it all about, what life is all about, in our own way, in the material way, in the materialistic way. And this then allows for the church, of course, to become, again, reactionary. If the majority of the congregants believe this sort of thing, and you keep saying, no, it's not, there will come a time when you will go on and join their gang and say, yeah, well, maybe you're right. Let's try to theologize materialism. And there is the root of the problem for the church, i.e. it has consistently sought to now theologize and thereby mythologize what the church is or the faith. I was reading, I think one of the, who is it? I think it's Father Martin, or I forget his first name, now says God can be
James,
called.
James, I believe, the America Magazine editor, Dave Martin.
Is it James? He's a
American?
Jesuit. American. Yeah, Jesuit. Yeah. He says you can call God her and she and all. That's no big deal. And that's the whole point, theologizing materiality. And that was like a very pithy expression of what the problem is. So when he says you can actually God's a woman too, you immediately understand where we're at as far as the church is concerned. If this becomes a perfectly normal way to express theology, then this is where we're at. So what I would suggest with all of this, kind of a rambling response to your very pertinent question, what I would suggest is that what we're really looking at is a state of great confusion. And this is the other aspect of both Reformation and Revolution, is that once only rationality and materialism are essential to life, the result is confusion, i.e. exploding drug use, exploding identity politics, gender politics. This is all an expression of that confusion, because you've basically pulled the rug out from society, and now you're trying to weave another rug, but it's going to, you know, you may not work, you know, succeed in weaving one other rug for society. But in the meantime, society is in free fall. There is nothing holding it up. And so you have immense confusion. And this is something I think that the church is ill-prepared to handle, is really making things worse, because it is part of the confusion. It is not understanding what is going on. And unfortunately, by suggesting that we go back to something is not an answer anymore either. I.e., you can't be conservative, traditionalist, and all of these adjectives that we like to throw around. Those aren't going to be solutions, because you also agree that there is no rug. You also agree to materialism and rationalism. So if we keep playing the game by, let's be blunt, by their rules, we're not going to be playing the game very successfully, and we're playing to lose. And we're always going to be losing the game. So that's how I see it. It's a massive problem, and the solutions aren't simple anymore. They are simple, but they're not, because of the way we've created our mindset, the way we've constructed the mind. And that, I think, is a serious problem that we're facing.
I was surprised the other day to see Walker Percy referenced in an article, and so he was, and the quote was most pertinent to your point, and we've reached an hour or a minute in our discussion here where we need to address one or the others of these, and the balance will be taken off in our next episode. The quote from Walker Percy was, "Modern man has a choice between Rome and California." And I ask you, Dr. Das, should we zig towards Rome or zig towards California in our last 10 or 15 minutes here? In other words, should we address the state of the church, in particular where it's going, and certain discussions and ecclesiology is forming, or is it more appropriate here to describe California and this tech thing, which is dark?
I think let's deal with the darkness first, and then we can move into the light. So that's what I would suggest. And with that, what I would suggest then is, given what we've been talking about in the past little while, what we end up with is, like I said, the confusion. And of course, confusion is also managed chaos. It's not what we think it is, but it has a means and an end as well. Confusion exists for a purpose, because it all then falls into place. You do not have perpetual confusion. What we're then witnessing, the darkness, the California, whatever we want to say, is the natural end of rationalism and materialism, where physicality alone, or the senses alone, are explanations enough for everything. Chaos, or I should say confusion, is the result. And I refer to confusion as dark, as sinister, is because it is always destructive, not simply physically, but of course emotionally, and more importantly, the spirit. Christ himself said, "Don't fear those that will destroy the body, but fear those that will destroy the soul." This is where we're at. And we do not understand the nature of that fear anymore, because we do not recognize, we do not even see the soul often, given the mass confusion perpetrated by cities like California and the industries that inhabit these kinds of cities and the products they produce. We no longer understand the fear of confusion because we don't understand the purpose of living, which is the cultivation of the soul. So this is where I would like to for us to, it's an introductory remark, I should say. This is where I see the gist or the nub of the problem. This is where we're at as far as that goes.
Do you, on a more states aren't tangible, but on a more concrete, abstract fashion, as we look in the episode to come about where the church may reorganize itself, do you feel, as I do, that the nation state is this thing we've had for 300 or 400 years and fits or starts as we understand it? Problematic, but not altogether condemnable, the idea of a public space. Do you think, Dr. Das, that this is about to be, in the century ahead, we'll say, I'm saying tomorrow, to be overpowered by private interests? And some examples of that, just maybe from more recent American experience, would be the TTP, which was a dodge of a bullet. The fact that in this country we had, at the very least, as a nugget to think about, the deplatforming of a sitting American president, and I think a bit more than that, but that's another discussion. It would appear to me that a new order of we can look at the dark stuff, but just on a more mundane level, the nation state, this whole concept of the public space, and which was predicated on the idea of rationality and civic participation, and maybe a lot of it was boilerplate and people never believed in it, at least for the last 100 years. I mean, by the time you get to Woodrow Wilson, and how much do they really believe in the Enlightenment in its original rock-ribbed format? At least a century of rot and the rise of the admiralty system and all the public-private partnerships and all that, it really, to me, appears that the whole nation-state idea, which was the fruit, a good or bad, of the Enlightenment, is about to be overpowered by something darker, which is this new tech thing, right? They don't make any pretenses that man is rational. You're an idiot. Sit down and shut up, and you're going to be told what to do. And these ones rising do believe in dogmas and doctrine in the worst and ugliest and most totalitarian sense of that word, and the kind of the pop sense of it, right? You will shut down and sit down and shut up. And that's because we from Silicon Valley know best. Do you believe that's a proper appreciation of the, putting our situation within the church in the concept of the West? The nation state is about to be overpowered and at this hour cannot do anything about it.
I agree. I agree that we're dealing with powers that are very well organized, and by that I mean technology and all this sort of thing. Very well organized, very sinister, and all of that sort of thing. Yes, I agree. And I also agree that the future of the nation state is very limited, if at all, no longer tenable. I don't think this idea has succeeded too much. With all that said, I also think that once these powers that be, that these great sinister forces, are also limited in their ability. Why? Because they are the next expression of the nation state. They've become nation states in their own right. And what they're now trying to do is, of course, hegemonize. They're trying to bring the empire model onto their state of being. And of course, there's good empires and bad empires. I'm not against empires. There's good and bad. But I don't think they will succeed either. Yes, it's going to be dark and dangerous and sinister for a while. And I don't know how long. I can't say. But they also are utilizing a model that has failed. And to be very honest, their power is only as great as the nearest plug. The minute you yank that plug and go out into the field and say, I don't need the screen anymore for anything, they are gone. So their power, yes, it's real, it's sinister, and all that sort of thing. And deplatforming, of course, I understand that. But the minute where human beings say, okay, I'm really sick of this screen, I'm going to trash the computer, trash the cell phone, et cetera, I'm just going to be going and looking at real people, sitting down for a coffee with some real people, and I'm going to be talking with them. I'm going to plow the fields. I'm going to eat the potatoes I grow, et cetera. They have zero power. So in a lot of ways, as with all nation states, as with all of these nation states, we are really looking at this idea of a social contract. We agree with all of this stuff. We want their technology, and they say, sure, but it comes with these rules. And they say, okay, fine. I don't like the rules, but I still am going to be using this screen to no end, constantly throughout my life, all the time, 24 hours a day, etc. So we've brought Satanism into our lives. Let's put it that way. And I think this is the essential core here. Because human beings are fundamentally God-given, they cannot be Satanized, for lack of a better term, without their consent. You do not become possessed by a demon because you just somehow happen to walk into a haunted building or something. You invite the demon in. This is, you know, magic 101. You know, this is, if you study magic, the history of magic, this is what this is all about. So we always invite the demon in. And once we invite the demon in, we accommodate the demon. So I don't see them as 100% sinister, for sure. Why? Because we've signed the social contract with them. And they are no more powerful than that simple contract. So, you know, all those crises that we encounter, like online harassment, deplatforming, and et cetera, oh, I was banned, I was this. Well, no matter what, you have agreed to the social contract, which is the screen. And we cannot access the screen without agreeing to that social contract in any shape and form. Whether in that process we sell our soul, that's a different matter. You know, and this is where we're at. Some people do sell their souls in order to become screenish. And if you're going to be screenish, then you agree to all this sort of thing. So yes, it's sinister, but I also don't think it's the end of the world sinister.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, the old saying is the devil gets one by inches. And what's happening now has been hundreds of years in the making. And if you have a hard time envisioning what apostolic succession looks like, you should follow the trend of some of these agendas that are coming to a head, because you will believe that, and you will also come to a deeper understanding, a more serious understanding of what original sin is, that generations can come and go, but certain ways of thinking and certain works are there. It's quite remarkable. I would elaborate on our closing minute, and when we come back, you can pick up right on this point, Dr. Das. In 2 weeks' time, when we talk about the contract, if I may, and you can respond next show. It's the screen primarily, absolutely, and we can think about certain things said about Plato in his old cave, and we can bring that up to this year, because what happened in America, just as a snapshot, by late December, early January, was hardcore psyops, and it was done by a minuscule amount of people who had access to cameras and certain television stations. Remarkable. the type of psych warfare which happened, and is right now, as of this recording, still going on these networks and so forth. Absolutely, it's a screen. I would also extend that idea of the contract to the economic system, to a certain, everyone's doing it, assumption of what it means to be normal in this society, certainly to the legal system, literally works on a contractual basis. So we're confronted with the reality as we look at the state of the church and where things are going next episode, that we have met the enemy and he is us. We have been the ones who have done this. It's not been all from the bad guys down below or over there in that smoke room over there. We've done this, and that's the hard pill to swallow.
We are the globalists. This is the problem.
Yes. And on that point, that's a downer, but even more of a downer is the fact that we're out of time here. So Dr. Das, tell us about the postal in this merry month and what we can look out for.
Sure. I think some really interesting things that people should encourage people to go look at the postal. We have a very interesting interview with an Austrian philosopher, Conrad Paul Liesmann. Very interesting thing about what education is all about. And he sees his education as a provocation, and he sees where culture is going and stuff. And I think people will find that very, very interesting to take a look at.
Excellent, excellent. And as regards the school that Dr. Das and I run, Apostasis, an Institute for the Humanities, I invite you to go to apostasisinstitute.wordpress.com. You may find out about the school in abstract. You may find a link over to our various social media, and you can see some presentations and interviews and whatnot. But also on that WordPress site, you may also see the courses that Dr. Das and I are running this summer and then this autumn. These are college-level courses, and they cover all sorts of things. The legal system, pedagogy, Rome is always popular, Dante, all of these on my end. Dr. Das, what are some of the ones you're going to be going on about?
Well, I was thinking we're going to be doing Beowulf, the Vikings, even the Weimar Republic, more history, those kinds of things.
Excellent. So anyone who wants to do that can go to the website there. And then as regards this show, if you have any correspondence, comments, or questions, of course, put them in the description below. But actually, the best place to contact us is at christianhistoryandideas@gmail.com. And the fact is, a lot of the comments on YouTube, we're not notified of them, or they're scrubbed, frankly. I've had that happen dozens of times. And that's a whole other show, I suppose, but the Gmail is good. christianhistoryandideas@gmail.com. And with that, Dr. Das, thank you for your expertise on this episode 25.
Thank you, John. Great to be here.